It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Our next texter, Ton, says they put systemic on their pine tree's trunk in May. It was for scale. Should they reapply, and when? The tree is about 40 feet tall and about 20 years old.
All I can really say is look at your instructions, because you generally only put systemic down once a year. And as long as you follow the instructions on how much to put down according to the width of the trunk, you shouldn't need to.
Okay. So usually it's just once a year, but make sure you look at what you applied.
Yeah. When people text in these questions about pesticides, unfortunately, my first answer is always going to be is refer back to your label on the instructions, because you know, the label is the law, literally. And so those will generally say put down in spring and then only apply annually. Or, you know, I've never seen one that you're supposed to apply more often. But because labels change quite often and there's lots of them out there, with that being said, they need to refer back to their label.
Okay, a few weeks ago, you gave someone the email for Sheridan.
I responded to it already.
Did you? Okay.
I did.
And Sheridan is going to be joining us next week?
She, on July 11th.
Okay. My days are just, I can't keep track of the days. So on July 11th, Sheridan will be joining us. Because you decided to take a day off.
Well, maybe. I'm going to be out of town, and
you're
because,
like me. We don't take very many days off.
No, we don't. Because of where I'm going to be, the internet's a little bit sketchy. I'm having Sheridan come on, and that way, if I drop out, we've still got Sheridan to answer questions.
Okay, perfect. So we have a call from David in Kaysville. Good morning, David. David, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. What is your question?
I have apple trees. The leaves are kind of crinkly. They're folding up along the mid vein, like a clamshell, not all the way. Is that because of they're not watered enough?
In certain varieties, that folding up can be a response to heat, to where you're doing everything right, and all of a sudden we get some 90-degree days and the tree's leaves crinkle a little bit or fold at the midrib. And that's just a drought response. It reduces exposure to sunlight a little bit. Now, how long has your apple tree been in?
3 years.
3 years, so it should be established well enough. And what is the schedule on it as far as when you're irrigating?
Once a week, drip system.
Okay, and now on that drip system, how many emitters do you have?
Usually four per tree.
Four per tree, and you've got them spaced out away from the trunk a bit?
Yeah, about a foot or so.
Okay, so for now that's fine. What I would do in the future, and this is kind of a side note, is those roots grow, those emitters don't expand the amount of area that they're putting water into. And so what I would consider doing, you know, on that fourth, fifth, sixth year as those roots really start to get out there, is to swap those emitters out for what are called micro sprinklers, to where they would more spray water evenly over an area that might be 6 or 8 feet high or wide in any direction, so that you're shooting out 5 or 6 feet in any direction from the trunk. That way, and you'll run those so that the water penetrates about a foot to 18 inches into the ground, and do that every 7 to 10 days. Especially if your apple trees and your other fruit trees are not being irrigated by lawn sprinklers.
So that's micro sprinklers.
Micro sprinklers, micro emitters, but they almost look like what you would use to water your park strip, but they put out far less water per hour on the gallons per hour. And when you do that, and they spray them, you don't want to if you live in the mouth of South Weber Canyon, it's not too practical, but you want to run them sometimes for 2 or 3 or 4 or 6 hours or however long it takes to drive that water around a foot into the soil, and then you let the trees dry out for about a week to 10 days.
Great. Thanks.
Great. David, thank you for your call this morning.
Yeah, Maria, I saw a text on somebody asking about
Codling moth,
yes. Since we're on apples.
That's where I was going.
So on codling moth, there is a spray called Carbaryl. It used to be sold under the brand name 7, but 7 has become a spray for several products now, which I didn't like. But if you're using Carbaryl to spray your apples, which it is registered to do, and to minimize codling moth, if you spray that too early in the spring and over apply it, it will thin your apples. In fact, a lot of commercial growers use it for that purpose on certain varieties because they know that if you spray at a certain rate and that the temperatures are so here and they're driving so fast, there's a lot that goes into this. And so I never recommend homeowners do it. But Carbaryl sprayed at the right way, right at the right rates, will thin certain varieties of apples.
All right.
But if they're using other sprays, I doubt that that's causing it. Mm-hmm. Apples normally have some natural drop in the middle of the summer, and they start dropping a lot of the fruit that wasn't pollinated correctly or might have a lot of frost damage. And so they may be seeing that. And so if they still have a good number of apples on the tree, I wouldn't be awfully concerned. You know, if 100% of the apples dropped or something, then there definitely would be. But if it's just the fruit is starting to drop, it's really normal for apples to do that, to just get rid of the non-profitable fruit. Its goal is to produce seeds to make new trees. And if the fruit that they're producing, the seeds aren't viable, the tree will drop them.
All right, before we get to the break, I want to make sure and get to Bart, who is on the line. And Bart, you have a comment about tomatoes this morning.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Don, you forgot to mention Glacier tomatoes.
Oh, Bart, I knew as soon as I got done with that call, I knew you were calling.
Tomatoes, right?
Yeah, well, I got to remind you guys, you know, I have taught, and Golden has taught for years, that with two varieties of tomatoes, you can eat tomatoes from the garden year-round. In fact, this year, on the 10th of May, for breakfast, I ate the last of last year's that I'd picked in October. And for lunch that afternoon, I had the fresh one from the garden. And I had Burpee's Long Keeper for breakfast and Glacier for lunch that afternoon. And I've done this for many, many years.
So when did you start your Glaciers this year, Bart?
Pardon?
When did you start your Glaciers this year?
I start all my Glaciers on the 20th of January.
I'm not even thinking about gardening on the 20th of January.
Well,
I'm thinking about freezing temperatures.
I mean, you want early tomatoes?
That's the thing to do, Homer.
But the thing about Glacier will set fruit at colder temperatures. They're not frost-hardy plants, but regular tomatoes take about a 50-degree nighttime temperature to set fruit. Glacier will do it at 39 to 40 degrees. That gives you a couple of weeks' advantage at getting them to set.
Well, Bart, we appreciate your comments and your advice. And now, next year, January. I got
it. Yeah, Golden probably had the earliest tomato of anybody ever. He had ripe tomatoes in early March one year. I had them in late March, and they were all Glacier. So with those two varieties, you can have early tomatoes.
Bart,
right now, I'm eating Glaciers and Sun Sugars and Sweet 100s.
Bart, we appreciate your call, and we're all jealous.
Okay.
Thank you so much for calling this morning. And the number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent. It was senseless. And I will never understand it. I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. the struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for spending your morning with the KSL Greenhouse Show. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Let's take a call this morning from Brad. Good morning, Brad.
Good morning.
What is your question this morning?
So, yeah, I live in Bountiful, just started some raised beds. I planted tomatoes, I've got squash, I've got rhubarb in a little individual container, like a pot, and they're all yellowing leaves, and I'm losing rhubarb leaves, and I'm losing tomato leaves, not quite sure what's going on.
So, unless you're overwatering everything, it's not really common for the same disease to be knocking out every species in your garden, because usually insect pests and diseases are mutually exclusive to a few close related plants. There are some exceptions, but then you start running into overwatering or something along those lines. So on the rhubarb, how long has the rhubarb been in?
This is probably since June.
So it's just this year.
Yeah, the leaves, though, they're probably about 8-10 inches wide.
Okay, and how often is it being irrigated?
Well, my wife uses a little meter she puts down in it, and if it says it's dry, she waters it. If it's not, then she leaves it alone.
Okay, the meters are fine, but sometimes I don't trust them too. And for me, especially on a new plant, you may as well just get a little gardening shovel, a hand shovel, go next to the rhubarb and dig the soil up and see how wet it is. And if it's moist and the root ball of the rhubarb is moist, don't water. And check it a day or two later. And when it starts to get, it's still moist, but on the drier side, that's when you hit it again. And so I would suspect, and I don't know for sure, if the plant is that young in the ground, I would suspect that it may be getting too much or too little water. But the other thing that digging will do, and you want to dig not just the top inch, but 6 inches down at least, is make sure it's not too dry, because being too dry would also cause it. But when you get yellowing leaves, but the leaves aren't crispy, oftentimes that denotes too much water. So I would check everything else in your garden. So on the tomatoes, what's the water pattern like on those?
Well, in the beds, what I've been doing is every other day, watering for an hour on a drip line.
Okay, and are they in raised beds or native soil?
Raised.
Okay, that still may be way too much. What you need to do is check your raised beds, dig down 6 inches or toward the bottom, and see what the soil's like. If it's moist, there is no reason to be irrigating. And so that much water will flush the nutrients through, even if they're well drained, and nutrients starve them if they aren't being impacted by too much water. And so I think that you may need to back off a little bit. And in those raised beds, I would maybe run for 20 or 30 minutes and then see, you know, give it 12 hours, you know, say water in the evening, go out the next morning if you ran for 30 minutes. And if the water's penetrated thoroughly through the soil, then cut that irrigation back to 30 minutes every other day or for 40 minutes every third. And you're just going to have to play with things. But I would suspect that things may be getting too much water.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right.
You're
Brad.
Welcome.
Give it a shot.
Thanks for your call this morning. Let's take a call from Skyla in West Jordan. Good morning, Skyla.
Hi. I have a question about my flowers. I moved into a house last year, and the people before us put in all the flowers, so I don't know anything about them. There's one particular flower that I have never seen before. It's really tall. It's almost my height, which is about 5'6". I'm 5'6", so it's about 5 feet tall. It just grows straight up. It's the weirdest looking thing. It looks kind of, I don't know even how to describe it, maybe like a cactus or something, but without the spikes. And it's red at the top and green underneath.
Hmm. What I would actually have you do is, boy, can you, our Facebook page, we've got Facebook Messenger on it, and you can message in a picture to us. That
okay.
may be the easiest thing to do, is have you
okay.
message in a picture and see if we can identify it. For some reason, if I can't, we could put it out to our listeners, and there's usually somebody, you know, there's
okay,
rarely
yeah.
a flower that nobody's seen.
Yeah, it is a super weird looking flower. It is, it doesn't have any like petals or anything. It's really weird. It's really pretty, but it's really weird.
Yeah.
And it's kind of dying, so I'm trying to figure out how to cut it down, or if it's a annual, or what needs to be done with it. Okay, so it's a KSL greenhouse Facebook.
Yeah, go to Facebook and just search KSL greenhouse, and
okay.
on our messaging portion, it'll let you upload a picture, and we can take a look at it.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
All right,
you're welcome.
Thank you for listening this morning.
Bye.
Next
Bye.
Texter Ton says their pear trees are gradually drying as the leaves are turning black and drying up. Is it too late to help them recover? Some of the same thing is happening to some of their apple trees.
Well, if their leaves are turning black, especially if they're going from the tips toward the middle of the tree, that's probably a disease called fire blight, and that would need to be pruned out. What they're going to want to do, did they say what city they're in?
They did not.
No. They would need to contact their local extension office, or USU has a newer page on Facebook called Utah Gardening Experts. So search Utah Gardening Experts on Facebook. You can upload pictures there, and a lot of times you will be taken care of within 24 hours or so of doing that. I don't want to call this fire blight, because there's lots of different things that turn pear leaves black that looks like it, but it's not. And so until you can look at it, look at the pattern, ask a few questions. But if those branches are dying one at a time, and there's one here, one there, and it's just working its way down the branch toward the trunk, that's fire blight.
All right, we have a couple of minutes before the top of the hour news. Next texter is saying, when training a shrub as a tree, should they leave it in bush form while the roots establish and then wait until there's obviously something that they can make into a trunk, or should they prune everything but the trunk as soon as it's planted? They're thinking specifically of pomegranate and lilac.
Oh boy, pomegranate, I wouldn't do anything to, unless they're going to be putting that into some sort of a cold frame all winter long. We have so many problems with pomegranate that the pomegranate gods would condemn your plant if you tried to turn it into a tree in northern Utah.
Bush.
If you were in St. George, great, but you need to just let that thing alone. You're probably going to lose some branches. You may lose the whole thing. And so I would just leave it alone. Now, in general, if you're trying to train a shrub up into a tree, what I'd actually recommend doing is buying a bare root shrub, if you can find one. So like a bare root rose, or a bare root privet, bare root rose of Sharon, whatever it is. And those younger shrubs that are bare root generally only have one stem anyway, or maybe two, and you can trim one back. But if you have a 5-gallon or a number 5 shrub that you just paid $30 for, and then cut 90% off of it into one branch, it'll probably recover, but you're going to hurt it, and you're going to spend a lot of money you didn't need to. So there's that. And then the other part of this is plan on spending 4 or 5 years training this thing up high enough, and then maybe another couple to get that trunk with enough girth on it to support it. Because bushes don't have a central trunk, and the branches aren't made to support the entire thing, and so you're going to have to be patient. The other thing with this is, because it's a bush, it'll always send up root suckers, and so once a month you'll be out there clipping them back. So it is possible, but when you do such things, it becomes a hobby.
As a side note, my pomegranate bush, it looks like a tree. It's about 4 feet tall now.
Yes, and the pomegranate gods have blessed you.
Yay!
But you haven't tried to turn it into a little mini tree.
No, I have not.
No, and has it been blooming yet?
No, that's what I'm disappointed in.
Okay, my friend Brandon Park up in North Davis County.
We have to take a break for the top of the hour news. Let's hold that over till the next hour. And you're listening to the KSL Greenhouse Show.
If you're
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.